Hey everybody, it's Rogelio, and I just wanted to apologize for having to show up later than normal. Usually it's Friday, latest Saturday, but it's just been a pretty hectic weekend here. Went to go see Jackson Job last night, start against Lansing Lugnuts, but nevertheless, no excuse. But just wanted to also let you know that, of course, the MLB draft show is coming up on July 14th, starting at 6 p.m. We'll be recapping the first half of the season. And judging by what happened last night, Tigers losing in extra innings against the Angels, and it's been some brutal baseball, folks. Just some absolute brutal baseball. I also wanted to note, too, the Craig Monroe news that broke out on Saturday. We'll be discussing that further. If there's anything to discuss on Thursday, what I mean by that is hopefully by then there's some investigative things that come out, what have you. And so for now, it's just been a lot of just weird dead air by the team. And again, I think they're just doing their due diligence to figure out what the hell exactly happened. Either way, we also have the Tigers minor league report recap show on Monday nights live on our YouTube channel. So please let us know what you think. If you also, I just wanted some feedback as well. There's some things you want to see on our YouTube channel. Anything really just would go a long way. If you leave us a 5-star review, we really appreciate it. And thank you for being a loyal listener. If you have been, I know that we have some people who love our audio format versus our video format. So thank you so much for listening. Just from the bottom of my heart, I sincerely mean that. And enjoy the show and have a good week, everybody. A little bit of a different look this evening. Welcome to another episode of the Motor City Metrics podcast here at TigersOnTheHillReport.com. I am Rogelio Castillo. Alongside me is Clay Soden of Just Baseball. Mike should be joining us momentarily, and Chris is on assignment in Lansing as he went to go see a start from Jaden Hamm, and he got some eyes on Yoavir Sanchez and a couple other relievers. So we'll get to that a little bit. But first and foremost, I wanted to thank our sponsors over at BetOnline. BetOnline is your number one source for all sports betting needs this season. From baseball, golf, soccer, right to the top fights in UFC, MMA, and boxing. Every stat, every matchup, and even live odds and spreads while the games are being played. When the game's over, head to our online casino and get in on the game of blackjack or poker, or unwind with one of our over 150 slot games. Head to the website today to get on the action. Use the promo code BELIEVE for a 50% free bet credit on your first deposit up to $250. Bet online. The game starts here. You get all the latest stats, news, and sports available to follow your favorite teams. Get the latest odds and lines, including your team matchups, player props, and odds on just every sport out there, whatever's left. There's now a professional pillow fighting thing out there. There might be even some for that. That was something that I randomly scrolled through the other day. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to get on the action. Bet online or the game starts. First and foremost, Clay, thank you for coming in. We appreciate it. How you doing, man?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on. I always enjoy, you know, chit-chatting with you about baseball. That's for sure.
Yeah. And this was a week for the Tigers where it was the Dave Dombrowski experience. And some of the things that I crack up about was that it was we had comments all last week on the show where they were called the American League Pirates. And it was funny because one of a beat writer put it on Twitter. It's like, fans been saying that for a while. It's nothing to surprise, but they go out and they lose a series to the Phillies, which, you know, we expected at least the Tigers to get something, at least with Skubal on the mound to get that. But yesterday's game, it was kind of mostly charged a little bit. You had Spencer Turnbull come back. Although the Wencel Perez called out strikeout, there's a lot of weird moments over the week that were just strange in general. But Philly came in and didn't exactly punch him in the mouth necessarily per se. Skubal beat Suarez, which was a pitching matchup that we all expected to happen. But other than that, I mean, they start a 10-game road trip tonight, starting in Anaheim, a place where traditionally speaking, the Tigers have always, since the dawn of man, have always struggled. But I don't know, what were some of your impressions of the series? Because the bats again continue to struggle a little bit. There's just been, outside of Riley Green, the offense continues to putter along.
To me, that's pretty much it, is that it's just solidifying what you're saying more and more. Every day we have more evidence of it. And every day you have one less day to fix it, one less day in the season to turn it around, and it looks less and less likely. And I just think at this point, they really are just what they are. And this is usually when you can start saying that, you know, the turn into July, the turn into the All-Star game, trade deadline, when you really start to self-evaluate, you have that sample size. The Tigers just don't have the horses right now to score enough runs and compete. It is that simple. I think the pitching's in the right direction, not only in terms of the active roster, but development within the system, pitchers coming up. I think that they're doing well there. It's, you know, the bats, they've got to figure it out. This team has underperformed even to, I think, most everyone's standards. I thought we all thought that they would be not, you know, putting up 11 runs a night, but definitely a more sustainable offense than what we've seen. So it's just kind of been a disappointing watch on a lot of nights.
Yesterday's loss was, I think, was one of the disappointing ones to me, because you get the Mark Hanna has kind of fallen off the face of the planet, which was kind of almost, you saw some of the trends last year a little bit where maybe perhaps expecting it, but what didn't expect at all to happen is that your bottom four, you know, the bottom four of the order did absolutely buckus. I mean, it's just a thing where you look at, even like Perez has kind of cooled off a little bit, but I like what Demetrius said here. He sums it up perfectly. I was at the Tigers game yesterday when Matt Verling home run to tie it up. Other than that, absolutely nothing since then. Where's the energy after the 5-0 start? You know what? I don't know. I don't know where it is. And I think that, again, some of the blame that AJ Hinch has been getting, I think it's rather ridiculous a little bit, because he can only do so much. He's not one of those guys that's a rah-rah guy. He is what he's a smart guy, and he's going to put the best lineup he possibly can. But as you said, there's just not enough bats there. And one of the things that mentioned, too, is as far as, like, Tyler Holton going out there on a bullpen start, didn't do too bad, but Kinda Montero is still having that same issue with his command, where a lot of his things, like, he's just – everything's over the plate. He just cannot. And the same, I noticed this even this year in Toledo, his swing and miss stuff is completely different.
I really like him, and I think that he can figure it out. He has one thing that's kind of tough to teach at times, which is the stuff. And I do think that he can be productive. He had 16 swing and misses, or some, you know, a large number of swing and misses yesterday against a good team. That doesn't happen by accident. The location is the issue, and you saw it. He walked a batter, boom, home run. That's where the issues fall with him. Again, how many times have we said, trust this staff into helping these pitchers, and it's worked out? That's why I'm really encouraged by him, because he, A, has the stuff to get swing and misses. B, the other parts of it are a little bit easier to refine, in my opinion. You don't have to try to make a 93-mile-per-hour fastball 97. You know what I mean? He's got that. So he has enough there. Now it's just about molding him, getting him more experience, learning how to pitch a little bit stronger. Because when you fall behind in counts and he's going to try to work back with the fastball, that's where he's going to get beat at the major league level compared to AAA. You're down 3-1. Now I've got to go fastball here, because he's not quite trusting his stuff yet. And boom, it gets taken, you know?
No, that's a good way to put it. Because I think the one thing that about him, I noticed this year compared to last year in Toledo, and maybe it's just the way that I think last year he was built, like, he was at three levels last year. So I think has perhaps towards the end of the season made a little bit of fatigue, a little bit with that. But I do notice that there's a little more, experimentation and a little bit of confidence with them in terms of trying things out a little bit. But at the big league level, if you make a mistake, you're just going to get hit. And it's just a matter of command. But the swing and miss stuff is there. Like, I think you're absolutely correct about that. Just in addition to not just a high, it's one of those things where people talk about how does high spin translate? In this case, it translates for him quite a bit of movement. And so, you like to see that. And the other part of too about Montero that what I liked about the way they piggybacked on me yesterday too was they didn't have him start. I think that was better for his psyche overall, because Philly's such an aggressive hitting team that I think it allowed him a little bit to kind of maybe relax a little bit coming into the game.
Yeah. And I love that too. Just the idea letting the opener go out there. And it is different when you know you're going to start and you have all of that time leading up to the game and all of that time to think about it. And then you have the top of the order right off the bat. So I like what they did with him to bring him in. If I remember correctly, I think it was six, seven, eight in the lineup or somewhere around the back part of the lineup when he did come in. So I like that. They don't, you know, here's the beauty of it. They don't have to rely on him to win games this year. Like, he was not part of the plan to come in and, hey, you're the number five now. We need you to produce. Like, they have other players ahead of him in the depth chart. I'm glad he's getting his time now. And if there were a trade or two trades, you know, he'll get plenty of time. At that point, it's a lost season. Why not throw him out there and let him develop and let him work with the Tigers pitching coaches who have done so well to help mold some of these other guys who are ahead of him?
Yeah, and I think that does fare well to allow them to see what else they have in their system, because, I mean, normally it was by default, but if it was really Matt Manning, and we haven't really, and Manning hasn't really, to be perfectly honest, the last start I saw him in Toledo, then it's still the same issue. It's just a issue of, I think he tries too much with his fast, like just falls in love with a certain pitch, and then he gets in this rut a little bit. But Montero, I think I don't want to admit that maybe perhaps he might be better out of the bullpen, because I really want him to be a starter, but I still, maybe it's like a long, I think what the Tigers might do, like do what they used to do with a lot of starters, is bring him out of the bullpen and slowly but surely put him in the rotation. So hopefully maybe something like that, which would be beneficial.
I also think that the idea of the starter is now a bullpen arm is a stamp of failure. A lot of people see it that way. I don't see it that way at all. There's five starters. That's it. A lot more bullpen pieces shifting in and out. There's plenty of fantastic relievers that were once starters as well. It's not this, he has failed. It's, we want to put him in the best position to succeed. And sometimes that's out of the bullpen. We saw that with Flores making that move this season. I don't think it's a sign of anything more than, hey, we think he'll pitch better by just focusing on two pitches, maybe three, out of the bullpen. Like, I don't want people to kind of see that as this, it's a failure. You know, I think that the Tigers have enough, like, coming up in the rotation that if they did do that, it's not the end of the world. I'm not the biggest Ty Madden fan, to be honest with you. It's nothing against him. It's just every time I watch him, nothing stands out. I said this last winter. I went back and watched every single one of his starts, and I just wasn't that impressed. If that's a guy who moves to the bullpen, maybe it looks different, and maybe we have a different opinion on him. But not to just change the subject.
No. This is actually a really good segue. So continue.
Yeah. So whenever I've watched him, it's not as much of a, this guy's awful. It's more of a, nothing looks plus to me, and I don't have all the advanced data on minor leagues. And I don't want it either, because part of it is like nice to have. Part of it would be me wasting all my time looking at it. But part of it too is just like, all right, let's see. I've watched enough baseball to understand like what looks right at the major league level and what looks like it could play at that level. And there's too many times that I see him just groove a fastball that's too hittable. And it's a similar thing we talked about Montero. He's not locating well enough and he tries to battle back into counts. And at times, you get away with it in the minors because you can blow your fastball past somebody, even if it's not a 99-mile-per-hour fastball. And I'm just a little bit worried about him as a starter. I don't personally see it. I hope I'm wrong. I could see him more as a bullpen arm.
So Troy, in this chat real quick, said hopefully Fleury pitches well to raise the stock more. I mean, his last three games, he's got an ERA of like 090. So I hope so too, but we'll get to there's some Scott Harris discussion I wanted to get to. There's a couple comments, but getting back to what about Ty Madden, I thought last year watching him pitch in the postseason for Erie, where I think he had one point, he had a stretch like a 13 or it was like a 20 inning stretch where he was dominant mm-hmm. against lefties, where that was his biggest problem. However, that whatever he was doing in, I mean, double A, the triple A, has been, you're right, Clay. For example, his fastball, like, just been, it's been kind of what, it's been flat.
Yeah.
And it's just been, it's a lot of, like, his curveball, which can sometimes he snaps off a really good one and is able to locate his pitch. Like, if he locates on the inside corner, which he was able to, I haven't seen him do that at all since he got to Toledo. And it's even where even the start where he was, he only like went three innings, struck out like nine, or he had a pretty high strikeout number. Mm-hmm. However, it was a lot of times where if he was playing a better team would have taken advantage of it, because it was just a lot of, it was still make, they were still making a lot of hard contact with that. And so nothing to me, the one thing, even against a team like St. Paul, for example, St. Paul is, they got some prospects in there, and he's been able to, it's just, I'm trying to think of the best example of what Ty Madden reminds me of. He reminds me of a little bit of like, I'll give full credit to Chris. And the more I think about it, he is correct on it. He kind of reminds me of Kyle Funkhauser. Chris brought that up first, and you think about it and you're like, and you're going, oh, how's that? And then there's nothing that Funkhauser, like something like he got it, like dominated AA, got the AAA, and wasn't able to use his fastball effectively to get some swing and misses, or even for that matter, draw soft contact. And it's, you know, it's a brilliant observation by Chris there, because I feel like he has that same kind of, well, I guess, upside, if you will, with that. Like, kind of like you could see maybe as a 1-2 inning guy.
Yeah, and, you know, I was watching the other day, and he got a called strike three on the middle to middle inside part of the plate, and I was just thinking, like, that's just not going to happen in the majors. And I know there's sequencing involved, what pitch did he throw before, all that, but, like, my point about that tweet was, listen, a major leaguer fouls that off. Even if he's looking curveball, he's going to be able that caught way too much of the plate. It's either damage or it's live to see another pitch. Are you going to go back with a fastball, or now do you have to throw a breaking ball for what starts to look like a strike and breaks away? Like, that's where it gets harder, is if these major leaguers are fouling off kind of your pitches that fool them a little bit. Now you're going deeper into counts. They've seen your fastball this many times. They've seen your secondary this many times. How do you adjust within the at-bat? And that is something that I just think is a long ways to go. I don't know if there's going to be some type of a tweak or some type of a movement to him to the bullpen or what, but I'm just not as optimistic as, you know, a lot of people have been on Madden.
Yeah, my optimism is kind of fading a little bit, unfortunately, and I want to believe that he will be able to turn around, and but we'll have to see. I mean, honestly, I understand. Like, I was still skeptical heading into the season, going, okay, well, if you're going to make an adjustment to Toledo, then he'll be fine. But it hasn't been the case at all. So Scott Harris was recently on the Have a Seat podcast, which is the podcast, I believe, with Jason Benetti and Dan Dickerson. And of course, you know, for anybody that covers the Tigers, it's, you know, the questions are going to be very, even though those two being Dickerson and Jason Benetti have cachet, they do, but then, you know, the questions are going to be nothing like, you know, it's not, they're not going to gotcha questions or anything, but
those questions are likely somewhat approved. You know, yeah, you know, yeah, what I mean? Like, they know, yeah, what's coming. They're not going to come up with anything softballs, that's unexpected.
Yeah. Old BK in the chat said softballs. No, absolutely. It's going to be, I don't want to say softball. Maybe softball is a little bit spin because those two are a little different. But they're not going to go out. Yeah, you're right. They're not going to give anything hard and approved. They're definitely going to be approved. And so one of the things that he said, he's talking about, as the Tigers, this is a comment. This article was pulling some comments, and it said, the Tigers are currently navigating their 8th consecutive losing season, a fact that has understandably frustrated fans. Despite the pressure, Harris has opted to prioritize long-term growth over quick fixes. Quote, one of the differences between me and fans is I'm really emotional when I watch the Tigers, but I actually have to divorce emotions from decision-making. I have to push the organization forward in a healthy, constructive way. That means building it the right way. That doesn't mean chasing shortcuts, end quote. What? You know, that by the way, that podcast is pretty good too, but
Oh yeah,
I listened to the podcast, and then I wanted to pull the quotes. Like, what does that mean to you? I mean, what is that like? Like, I'm a little. I know what it means. I'm going to do the Harris interpretation thing I used to do with the Avila's interpretation thing. But what does that mean to you?
Well, before I even get into that, I want to first say that these GMs don't owe us anything. Like, you can listen to every GM thing in the world, every interview. They don't owe you anything, and they don't have to tell you the truth, because guess what? It doesn't matter. How often have we seen, you know, these people say, oh, no, we're not going to do this, we're not going to do that. Then they do it. They also don't want to give out too much information. So I never read too far into these. However, like, I see where people want to, and it comes from his mouth. It's why would I not believe him too? You know what I mean? Like, I get both sides of it. But the way I see it is, he is saying, like, we are not going to just be too aggressive, throw stupid money out there, getting bad contracts, trade away prospects for short-term fixes. Like, we're not going out, like, the Tigers are not going out there and trading Clark McGonigal and getting back Vlad Jr. to replace Spencer Torkelson, who enters, you know, and then Vlad is gone after next year. And it's, oh my gosh, we don't have anything in the farm now. You know, they're not going to do that. Longer term plan is kind of what I saw, which, you know, I realized they have not only have the Tigers not won recently, they haven't had a first half record over 500 since 2016. So, like, you usually know that they're out of it. Like, before the, you know, you go on your summer vacation, you come back home, and the Tigers are already out of it.
Yeah, it's I can always tell based off the downloads too. The downloads trail off after a certain period of time, where it's like, it kind of, it's like, gee, thanks a lot, guys, we appreciate that. Not the people listening, but you know what I mean. Like, if the Tigers did a little better, I know the downloads would be up. But I could, in terms of healthy, constructive way, I understand. Look, the farm system has made strides, and it has. And we've talked about this numerous times between myself, you, and Chris. There is things to hang your hat on. Absolutely, no doubt. But what I'm looking at that is that I understand what he's trying to say is, like, look, hey, guys, I'm the one that has to pull the trigger here, and I have to do that. And what Tim said in the chat was, it means the owner's sheep. I mean, he ain't too far off from that either. I mean, there's just, like, there's – well, however, again, when I think about when I was at the end of the year presser and when he was asked about free agency, and he just gave this weird look, like, why would we spend a lot of money on free agency? You can spend smartly, or you can make trades that are going to benefit you and be like, to give you some of the advantage of some sort of advantages. So he mentioned how the Tigers have adopted a, what he refers to as a high variance offense, or just, I mean, bad, not consistent. Is that, to me, it's just another word for not consistent, or we can't really hit.
Do you know what's funny about that is it's not that it's high variance. It's that it's bad. And it just happens that you play 162 games, and no matter what, some teams are going to score 11 runs when you play them. Like the Oakland Athletics, I've seen them score 14 runs this year. You know what I mean? Like, there's randomness when you have that large of a sample size. It's not high variance. It's just kind of the random things that happen on occasion. It's bad. There's no other way to paint it.
Because I think of, like, high variance, it's like one game you score 8 runs, the next game you score 2. Yeah. But it reads like binary code 1-1-1-0-0 1-1-1-1-1-0-0. It's Tigers offensive binary code. Period. I mean, the occasional what we saw in Atlanta last week, or I'm sorry, against Houston, who a guy you're supposed to see Justin Verlander, he got scratched, and they took somebody else on, so that the Tigers lucked out there, but. Here's the thing, when he was talking about his this is where the offense kind of, he was talking about the young players. He said, well, the best players in baseball often struggle really early in their career. We can't just jump off the train with some of the young guys because we're going to miss some really good years in the future, Harris said. I don't think anybody, look, I know some people have been impatient about Cole Keith, and Cole Keith has been hitting better since the beginning of May. He's been consistent. Look at the batting average now. If you don't pay attention, you just randomly saw his batting average, you're like, oh man, he sucks. No, he's actually been hitting pretty well. But it is one of the things that you're saying that too, is like, you're basically saying, you're telling everybody with that comment a little bit, is that the young guys we have, the young core, isn't that good. I mean, that's the way I interpret it. Like, it's just, we're going to really miss him. Like, we can't just jump off the train. Okay. When, like, for example, somebody like Ryan Kreidler, okay? Ryan Kreidler, people were like, okay, let's wait and see what happens. He's just over 100, just under 150 at-bats, I believe, something to that effect. I think there's enough sample size for certain players that I think you can make a decision on already.
Yeah.
But I don't know. That's where I'm just kind of confused by that comment there.
To me, that it has to do with the type of player. Ryan Kreidler, older prospect, and I hate saying that because it makes it sound like they don't have a shot, but older for a prospect type level, hasn't been able to stay. Like, he's fighting for a 40-man roster spot, like, every single day. Like, he truly is, and, like, I think he's fighting for his baseball life as a major leaguer. Someone like Cole Keith's not. He's got a big contract. Like, you can let that kind of, you know, play out. Just about kind of the struggles, Raj. I was talking to Aram, who is the founder of Just Baseball, yesterday. And I was asking him, like, why do you think it is? Because he watches a ton of minors and majors. And he specifically mentioned the ABS system, automatic balls and strikes, is changing at bats and how you do at bats at the minor league level. And the zone shrinks on these guys. Oh, yeah. Then they get up to the majors. And not only is the pitching much worse, and you know this, you watch enough minor league baseball to understand, like, you know, oh, Spencer Torkelson hit a home run. Oh, it's 91 right down the middle. Like,
ooh,
yeah.
Yeah.
Not only is it much worse, but you don't have that system. The zone is a little bit bigger. But, you know, I was thinking the other day when the Phillies and Aaron Nola had that backdoor two-seamer strike three looking right on the paint against Justin Henry Molloy. And Molloy knows the strike zone so well. Turned his head and just walked away. He knew it. Like, this is a different level, and it's so much more talented. It just takes longer. It really does. And I think that's why I've been saying, like, hey, like, if Chase Young's in your plan next year to play over 100 games and you want to be competitive, I think they need to call him up sooner than later. If the season's not going anywhere, I even said DFA or Shella. Like, that's how little I care about it. Like, you don't even need him on the roster. He was signed for $1.5 million. Like, there's not a ton of market out there for him. You know what I mean? So to me, it's get these young guys up. If they are in your plans next season to contribute at a high level and you are counting on them, why not start the clock? I know that not every single one of them is ready, but someone like a Jace Young, I thought, could be, or like a Parker Meadows. And
it really depends on how they use Young, too, though. I mean, sorry, the line sounded like it cut out there for a second, so I wasn't sure you're done there.
Sorry about that.
No, but I look at Chase Young as if the Tigers were really out of it in July, I think you see what you have with him. I just still think he still struggles a little bit with higher velocity, a little bit advanced spin anytime he's seen that. But his zone swing rate, too, was something that was like, so that was like, I thought it would be a little better than that.
With him specifically, my thing is, how much are you counting on him next year? And if they see those things and say, we really aren't going to count on him much next year, then that's fine. But I just have a feeling the way things are trending that they're going to have him in a plan next season. And I also have a different ceiling than a lot of people see with him. I think he's more of the 230, 240 hitter with pop and, you know, overall is a good player, but I don't see him as the special piece going forward. I see him as, your team's good if Jace Young's your fourth or fifth best player on it.
Yeah, and that's, yeah, especially if you're going to put some veterans on his team. Oh, wait, but there's more what Harris said about that, too. He said, he admitted that while signing more veterans would have been popular, it could have hindered long-term development. Quote, people would have been fired up. But in hindsight, when you look at what happened to some of those players, not all of them, but some of them would have been mistakes. I'm sorry. What? No. See, that to me, that's just basically saying, in other words, we really, you can say all you want about the free agent class last year. You can say what you want. I mean, like, it was like wishy-washy at best, but come on. I mean, all you're basically saying is then why, if you felt so strongly about your young players, then how come you signed Urshela? How come you signed, or you went, you traded, Kohep, or I'm not Blake Kohep, sorry, I got my relievers really confused.
For Canada?
Blake Holub. If you felt so strongly about your, you know, young core, how can you trade Blake Holub for a veteran Marcana? You know, yeah. Like just some of these things are just like, doesn't, there's a contradictory. It's just, if you're not willing to sign, like, you know, like for example, old BK just mentioned JD's raking for the Mets were like 22-3 or something like ridiculous, yeah. Something like that over the last 30 odd games, whatever the case is, may be. But it is beyond frustrating when, if you're a smart GM or a GM that just like, look, you can find players in the margins, as Brandon Day from Bless You Boys said, you can find players that can be useful to you, but you can find those veterans that could complement your young core. But I don't see that. I see stopgap measures that are guys that are just like, I mean, even like take a flyer on somebody that's like, maybe some upside to it, but I don't see any creativity. I mean, today the Tigers signed a, what's the guy's name? The guy who made the major leagues after 13 odd years. They signed like a veteran minor league who's been in the system. Like they, oh God, he was with the Pirates last year. Drawing a blank on his name right now.
Is it the like infielder guy who finally got his chance last year?
Yeah.
Oh gosh, what's that guy's name?
Now I'm looking it up right now. We have the power of the internet in front of us. Let's see here. Drew Maggie.
That's right. Maggie. Yeah.
Drew Maggie. And you're signing all these, you're signing these guys off the Atlantic League. And you're, I mean, come on.
Here's the thing with me and kind of Harris, where the team stands, what this is, blah, 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 whatever it is. Just kind of a roster construction brainstorm here. How good do you think the team's going to be next year? Where do you want them to stand next year? Is next year kind of step one of like, we're actually going to try to make something here and whatnot? Okay. Then you keep Scooble. Okay. Then you spend that $15 million or whatever, 14, whatever, from Flaherty, that 10, 11 from Canna, and the options that are out there, you know, Shelby Miller, whatever. You spend some of that money and you go out and you get one or two bats. You know, it's reasonable. That's a plan that I think could happen and would be worthy of, you know, saying like, okay, this could work. Or is it, oh man, you know, we drafted these high schoolers, we're waiting around, exactly sure on that last wave of prospects coming up. Well, then you got to talk about the hard trades to make, and you got to talk about more, you know, years of being upset. It's just kind of where does he think this plan is going? To me, it's how many players on this roster right now are for sure future pieces. Offensively, not on the pitching staff. Green, Carpenter, you know, there's a couple, but you have so many role players starting right now. Matt Vierling's a fantastic player. I've always said every World Series team has a Matt Vierling type on it. Yeah, because he's on the bench. He's the super utility guy off the bench on a good team, not a starter. I love him. I know he's playing very, very well, but you know, we just have to be realistic about kind of where the roster is and where it's heading and what that might look like as the deadline approaches.
Yeah, there's one comment that was like, it was funny. I saw this on a fan-sided article, which I just kind of roll my eyes at, which was the comment. In the article, it said Tigers are in a weird place right now, which is true, no doubt, and they seem to be unequivocally their role on the impending deadline. They don't like spending money, and they seem to loathe to give up any of the rising stars, which is really just Scooble and Riley Green at this point. So Scooble being mentioned in trade deadline is a huge game changer. No, it's not a game changer. It's just common sense. A and B. That whole paragraph I had a problem with. It's just
so I have a question about you. I was thinking about this today because I knew I was coming on. I figured Scooble would come up, and I was like, I'm thinking about, because like deep down, like I just don't want them to trade him just because he's so fun to, you know, all the fan right. Part of not wanting to trade him. Business side, I get it. It does set you back. It will set you back. Breaking news, trading one of, if not the best pitcher in baseball, will set your team back a little bit. Then I started to think, the reason why everyone wants to trade him right now, besides where the team's going, is he'll never have a higher value. He's healthy and he has this much control. What right. if you reverse that and you or the other team saying, huh, he's at his highest value. He's been this good. He's never been this healthy. Like there's a other side to this. And it just got me thinking, like, what if other teams are saying, like, I don't really know if we want to buy him at his literal, like, sky high value when this is the best he's ever looked. And he's coming off multiple injuries and, you know, there's other things to it. Like, I wonder how much different his value is at this deadline, at this winter offseason, and then at next year's deadline. And if it's really all that much different, to be honest with you.
You know, I'll be honest. I will come clean. Like, we talked about this last week. I didn't want to talk about school bowl trades. I was like, nah. I wanted a little void noise. But the way you're phrasing it and the way we're just, I think the reality of the thing is that you're right. I think his value is as high as it's been. Now, that being said, do you trust Harris to get something out of it? And that's the question is no idea. Because right now, I mean, you can look at the Matt Verling trade and what they got for Gregory Soto. I mean, they got a serviceable player out of it, but Nick Maton's no longer in the organization and Donnie Sands, the same thing. He's gone. So you look at that going, huh, crap. Okay. What about trading with the Dodgers or Orioles? The Orioles would be intriguing, but are they going to grab two or three good prospects that are going to be, because if you're going to grab, okay, if you're going to make a trade for Scooble, you want somebody who's going to be able to play tomorrow, the next day. You want to be either a guy who's just right now just needs major league at bats. Like, somebody's talking about Christian
Hurstad.
He's looked good in his third time, he's mastered Triple A, but he has
hit a home run tonight.
All right, well, I'll take that. Like, but then you realize that if he then is at the same position or the same, as far as like Parker Meadows goes, like, what if he comes up here and doesn't do anything, and then you have two outfielders that don't do anything, and you're screwed on that regard.
Yeah, and the other thing about that is, like, when you're talking about his value, sometimes there's too high a value that you can't get it. If I were to say, I live in Lexington, Kentucky. If I had Ernest Hemingway's typewriter, I could not get that value out of it in Lexington, Kentucky. There's just no one here would pay. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, what I'm trying to say is, oh, he has 2.5 years of control. He's the best. He's this. He's that. Jesus Luzardo got injured. That's one less lefty on the market. There may just not be that team willing to pay the fair value out there because it is, rightfully so incredibly high. So would you rather take a lesser package or would you rather hold on, wait till the offseason, wait, you know, I don't know. But that, you know, it always comes down to the value. And like you're saying with Harris, like, will he make the right move? It's just, we haven't seen enough, in my opinion, to say, yeah, I think he will, or no, he won't. Because that Lee trade is looking pretty good so far for a rental pitcher who was, you know, Lorenzen's good, but everyone kind of knew what he was. And, you know, I think he's done okay. I think he's just been fine. Overall, like, I don't know. It's just kind of tough to see him getting the right value for Scooble.
Yeah, and I would, if like a trade like Lee, for example, Lee is a guy who I think could see some time at the major league level. That being said, there's still, even there's not a trade where you've seen it on the impact on the major league level.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, like outside of Verlaine, let's face it here. If they did a trade, let's say a classic, for example, I always think of how Nate Dabrowski was able to get somebody you were like, the Carl Skeen trade. I always think about that trade, for example. That trade at the time was like, well, he's put up some good numbers in Seattle, and he was all right. And then he got significantly better here. I mean, the Carl Skeen trade to me is one of my favorite Dave Dabrowski trades of all time. They needed a shortstop. They got their shortstop, and they, and that's why, like you mentioned that too. It's like, well, we just traded when we needed to trade something. And I don't see Harris. Harris, I think, was trying to be the smartest guy in the room all the time. And you mentioned this earlier about, you know, like these young GMs that have to have this, like, no one's going to screw me over. And same thing.
I don't want to get pushed around. I got to set my ground early.
Yeah, and I agree with the YouTube user here. Tiger fans are still traumatized by the Verlander trade. And Henry, about Jack Flaherty, who is taking the mound right now as we speak, I hope with the Flaherty trade, I hope that if they do trade Flaherty, that they would at least get one starter, at least one like starting positional player out of that. One. And on the major league level. Because I know they're going to sit there and say, well, Flaherty is just a one-year contract. Okay, fine. But he is pitching way better than Michael Lorenzen did. I believe he's under 30. So he's not – he's a guy who's coming back in the form. And if you look at some of his advanced numbers, they're outstanding. I mean, if they let him pitch the rest of the year, the Horse Tigers don't get anything. But go ahead, Clay.
Can't they qualify offer him? So if I'm a team – if I'm a team who trades for him – I get the 1 year out of it, this run, whatnot. It doesn't work out.
I think you're correct.
Those who don't know, like if they offer him the qualifying offer, he can accept it. You know, 1 year, $18 million or whatever it ends up being. You have a good pitcher for 1 year at a reasonable price. If they decline it, then that team who just traded the Tigers or prospect gets a comp pick back, which very well could end up being a similar level prospect. Yeah. So theoretically, like maybe he is able to get, like you're saying, like, man, we don't really want to give up, you know, insert the player who's blocked or struggling, who's 25 years old. We don't want to give him up, but, you know, we might be able to, you know, there's that back part of their brain going, we can get that qualifying offer. We can recoup with the top 40 pick in the draft or whatever it ends up being.
Yeah, and that's where also, depending on the team, if they're good enough in development to get that going, too, that's also if they can trust the process with that. But as far as what they can get for Flaherty and Scooble goes, look, if that's the case, even like trading like guys, the guys are trying to think of like for like the Carson Kellys of the world to make room for Dylan Dingler, just do what you have with that. I think what you're telling fans at that point is like the PR spin on it is going to be ridiculous. Well, you know, it's just we're not in contention this year. It's just going to be another thing. In reality, it didn't have to be that way. I think the reason why I think Tiger fans are, I will say this, Tiger fans in general, a lot smarter than what people give them credit for. It is, they're not fooled by bullshit. It's just one of those things where it's like, After so much time and all the things that have been happening since, I mean, the 2019 season, the amount of prospects that have flamed out until recently, it is beyond frustrating to no end. And so I think that if the Tigers were competing and they had made some sort of attempt to like fix it, instead of just excuses like, well, you know, I'm paraphrasing here, but like just it sounded like to me, it's like, well, we want to make sure we're making the right move. Then what is like, so when is that going to be then? What is that going to look like? What you're telling your fans is essentially we're too scared to do anything.
Exactly. And I think that this young GMs are going to learn, and you hear about them in interviews. If you listen to a lot of, and this goes across multiple sports, they will say, and you see it in their actions. How often do we see a football team lose two linebackers? And next year, they have seven new ones in camp. Because that GM saw, man, we got short there. I'm never going to let that happen again. It's a learning curve for them as well. I think Harris put way too much stock into the idea of Colt Keith hitting right away and Parker Meadows being able to hold his own and be a starting center fielder. I think those two things had a little bit too much stock in them. Then you have, you know, those of both, you know, Keith's, like you mentioned, has come around. Meadows is in AAA. And then you have Spencer Torkelson, who they thought they could count on. And what's the backup plan there? It's Barron in the minors. It's 35, 36-year-old Mark Canna, who is also age has caught up with. and it's Gio Urshela, the under 700 OPS singles hitter, Fancy Harold Castro, Gio Urshela. I just think that he did not come up with a strong enough plan for plan B. Plan A, he thought would all work. Plan B and C were a little weak, in my opinion.
Yeah, and you know what, though? That just continues with Avila, because Avila didn't have a plan either, and they just threw Torkelson into the fire, and they really were just like, oh, we'll see what happens. And they rushed. You can sit there and say they rushed in the majors. Absolutely. And there's more to it than just Torque also refusing to change, you know, swing and the mechanics or anything, too. I mean, it's cool that he hit, don't get me wrong, 30 home runs, great. 231, not so great. But the defensive lapses from here and there and those things, they add up. But I think you're right. I believe you're 100% correct about this. But it just continues a trend of the last 5 years. The Tigers have not had a backup plan. They have not been inventive enough to think of something else to the point where, like, to where they have an alternative. And they haven't. And that's what's frustrating to me. You can make all the progress you want in the farm system. That's great and all, but you're not going to tell me right now, down in AAA. I mean, even right now. It was mentioned Eddie's on our back on the IL.
Yeah.
You don't have you really don't have an option for short right now. You really don't have an option for a space. You're going to just wing it. And they're not even inventive enough. I mean, even Cleveland right now, Cleveland's got the 50 wins. They just signed Matthew Boyd, former Tiger. They signed him today. You know what's going to happen, Clay? You know what's going to happen, right? He is going to be a guy that they're going to use as an opener, who can go maybe one or two times through the lineup and just like, hey, air it out. Because Cleveland knows how to do that, and watch.
Thinking ahead. They're saying Tristan McKenzie may need rest before the playoffs. He's been kind of injured. Matt Boyd, go out there and be the August guy. We'll give you some money. You know, if we win the World Series, we'll ship you a ring, buddy. They're thinking a step ahead is what they're doing. They're realizing Ben Lively, I don't really know if he'll hold up like long term. And they're seeing that and going out and getting a proven guy, a lefty with some funk that they may be able to get in and change something. I feel like everyone said that about Matt Boyd at some point in the past 4 years. But I think the plan or lack thereof with the Tigers is really showing up right now. And think of where they'd be, not that like Wenzel Perez has been like, you know, the most incredible player in the world, but he's been one of the better players when you truly look at the entire lineup. Where would they be if he didn't just kind of happen to pop up for them? You know what I mean? And I know that you all have tweeted and covered him, and I've liked him as well, but I don't think that anyone projected him to be kind of an everyday or getting a ton of reps this season like he has. And he's been good. Where would they be without him? It's just been a lineup that I always say, we'll look back at this lineup in 5 years. Like, you know, you'll see someone post it and we'll laugh at it thinking, oh my gosh, man, is this really what they were doing?
Yeah, no, it's, I think it's going to be a, it's a thing where I, you know, the end of the podcast, Clay, I think out of the times I've done the show this year, I reflect on sometimes like going, okay, keep it real, keep it not too cynical or anything. But after the comments I saw this week, the Tiger, it's heading into July. So next week's already July. It's already crazy out of time. Time has gone by pretty fast. It's just, you look at it and you just go, you want to look for something like some rays of hope, something to hang your head on. I can't. Right now, I'm at that point where I'm looking at the farm system right now. I'm looking at look at West Michigan. Okay, there's some positives there with pitching, but the hitting right now has been across the system, with the exception of Lakeland. Lakeland has been the oasis that people want. I mean, McGonagall, Clark, you have Bassegno. There's a lot of things you can talk about Lakeland and go, all right, cool. But the rest, I mean, outside of Lee and Double A, it's awful. It's awful. And is it like top, lower bottom of the tier farm system bad? No. There's some upside to it. There's some pitching. There's some things you can hang on the farm system. But on a major league level, I just, night after night, I sit there and I don't tweet live anymore because I just, I think sometimes on X or Twitter, I'm just still gonna call it Twitter because it's the only thing that makes sense to me. On Twitter, it's just you're speaking to a void, because what's the point? It's just like you're seeing the same thing every time. It's the same kind of at bats, these quick at bats. You've seen all this great pitching being wasted because, quite frankly, you weren't imagined enough to do anything on offense, and you were not able to pull the trigger last year on whatever happened with the Eduardo Rodriguez deal. We'll never know, but what was going to happen is the Tigers were going to get a catcher, and it's just, YouTube user said it best. He says, "I think our best stuff from a position standpoint, being A-ball, tells you a lot about how far away we really are." And I mean, as much as people recognize us for not being, hey, everybody, the farm system doing good. We're going to keep it as honest as possible because it's a disservice to do anything like that.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. And, you know, the more, and that's the thing about following prospects, is how often do you get excited about a guy in single A? Oh, man, this guy's going to be good. And then it doesn't take that much longer before you lose your excitement when he's in double, triple A, and it's not producing the same results. And, and it's not just the Tigers. I follow every single team very closely, read about, watch podcasts about all of them. And you see this across, it's what happens when you take 17, 18-year-olds, put them through a expedited course, more or less, of how to get ready for major league pitching, and the majority of them are going to fail. The majority of them are not going to reach it. So it's disheartening. It sucks because you look over at Baltimore, who's winning, and you look at their farm system and they're producing, and you look at who they have coming up the pipe, and they're over here saying, we got to move these guys. We don't have 40-man roster spots. You look over in Cleveland, you see similar things. And I get it. It's one of those deals where you just want that for the Tigers. It just isn't there right now. And that's the thing. They have a new system or a new GM, and we'll see what he can do. I'm a believer that it takes multiple seasons before you can really judge a GM. So I'm still on the fence about him. But, I mean, this is a deadline. Like, if he comes out with a Flaherty return does wow us, like hey, this was a smart return. It's not just a couple of flyers, some guy who throws 98 with no control and will flame out. I just want to see what that return looks like, and then one more trade of something creative. I don't know what that means yet, but do something to spark or change up what's there right now.
Surprise people. That's what you want. Yeah. Because for example, I look at the Reds. Like, the Reds farm system was supposed to be very, very good, and has been. It's kind of flamed out. Like, watching Louisville.
Oh, they're awful.
Oh my God! It reminds me of Louisville when Brandon Flanagan was there a couple years back, and like that's a flashback for you. There's Mike. Mike, how you doing?
Hey, what's going on?
We were talking a little bit. We'll get your takes. I wanted to get your takes on Harris before we get out of here on what he said today, this week. But the Reds are a team that I thought were going to be better than what they're anticipating. And now Marte's on suspension, right? Is that right?
So tonight was his first game back. They're winning 11-5. But the Reds had a situation where last season they brought up 5 or 6 rookies and all of them graduated. So, weakened farm system, and then everyone's just kind of stunk in their farm system this year. Everyone's taking a nosedive down. Connor Phillips, top 100 prospect, had a 10-something ERA and got shipped back to, Arizona. Like, he's not going to be pitching for a while.
Yeah, Rhett Lauder.
It's been a weird situation in Cincinnati.
Yeah, Rhett Lauder.
He's had games where he struck out 9, then has back-to-back games of 0 strikeouts.
So, Pat, I don't know if you saw what Scott Harris said earlier this week on the podcast, on the Take a Seat podcast, but I wanted to ask you real quick before we get out of here, based off what Scott Harris was saying, he was talking about how we have to be patient. Essentially, the fans are impatient. I think it's almost insulting their intelligence a little bit.
My apologies. I didn't see the full comments, but I don't like when any person and any GM or president of any ops in any sport preaches patience. It especially one that hasn't been here for very long. I mean, I guess when you're trying to put a plan into place, what he's really trying to say is like, hey, let me do my job. Like I've been here a year and a half. I've been here 2 years, you know? Ultimately, that's what he's trying to say. But what fans hear when they hear patience is they hear, oh, it's going to be better one day. And, you know, for a baseball team that's been pretty mediocre for 10 years now, it's just tone deaf. That's all. And it happens in every sport. You know, this is definitely not a baseball thing. It's something we've heard in basketball quite a bit recently, and the Pistons have been kind of in the same boat, except they've been way worse. But it just happens in the same way. It's completely tone deaf to say anything like that. I think if you're smart, you just stay away from any kind of comments like that. Yeah. That's how I've always looked at those comments.
No, you almost like a trap comment there. And Chris, by the way, chimed in. Chris Brown listening on the way back. Can't give so in terms of Flaherty, can't give him a qualifying offer to play required in a midseason trade. Tigers can't give him one. Can give him one. Anyone they trade to can't.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's how it works.
That's good to clarify that. Yeah. I misspoke on that earlier.
Yeah. I wasn't 100% about that. Usually Chris is there when it becomes between the two of us. He's the contract man when it comes to those things. But no, and the other thing I want to ask you about this week, the offense, Mike, and in terms of what you saw with the Phillies, there's nothing – to me, it was nothing new. It's just the same old, same old. But was there anything that stood out to you this week against the Phillies?
I mean – I loved the Tarik Skubal or Ranger Suarez matchup. That was a baseball game, and it lasted 2 hours and 5 minutes. Why is it such a good pitching matchup, such a great game? Look, beautiful. You say it's great that it ends in 2 hours, but for me, I was like, that's it. It's over, because it went by so quickly. Both their starts, it just went – they were dealing. And I know the Tigers put up 4 quick runs. But, I mean, lasting 2 hours, I was just a little disappointed in that. And it just sucks. It really is every 5 days now. Like, I'm not trying to discredit Flaherty or Reese Olson, despite some of his recent struggles. But really, it really does feel like they get up for one game every 5 days. And it's the one that Tarik Skubal starts. And that's the only one that you really can expect them to do anything anymore. So... I wish I had the stats to back that up right in front of me, but really, it just that's all it is. I'm not going to get into what they need. That could take an entire podcast. Just the offense is what it is, and it kind of goes back to him saying, "Be patient." I guess I do want to. I've always said this since the beginning of the year, when the second Scott Harris said before the season that like he's going to let the young guys struggle. This is exactly what he was saying was going to happen. So whether you like it or not, Scott Harris told us this is exactly what was going to happen this season. And, I mean, considering they're, what, the 27th ranked offense, they're 6 games below 500. Like, if you look at it in a vacuum with just that, I mean, that doesn't seem that bad, you know? But this is exactly what he said was going to happen, and it's getting to the point where it's really rough to watch. I mean, I guess it's been there for a month now, but it's hard to talk about. I'm not going to lie. Like, I love doing these shows, but man, it was a lot more fun when I thought that they were a little bit better of a baseball team prepping for this show. Like, man, it's just a little bit more fun when they're more interesting. But like you said, it's just a lot more of the same, and it just doesn't seem like they're getting any better or really any worse either. So it's just, I mean, who knew? Replacing Javi Baez with Ryan Kreidler would be a negligible difference, really, you know? Like, it's the exact same production. So, I don't know. Everything's stagnant, almost. And that's a huge disappointment.
Oh, look at this. Chris Brown just, like, flying in from Lansing. Look at that.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt.
No, it's okay.
Right in time to wrap up the show.
Mike, by the way, you're brutal. Gentlemen, you know what's brutal? Badu, Molloy, McKinstry, Molloy or Baddoo 119, 145, and 195 batting average. That is.
Well, yeah, you know what I got? You know, the Tigers offensive players have a total of 4.6 WAR. I mean, this is Baseball Reference WAR. Love it or hate it, Riley Green has 3.6 of that. The rest of the offensive players have 1.3 WAR. I mean, that just puts it into perspective. Like, Riley Green really is their only. I mean, he's an above average player, clearly, if he's worth that much right now. But the rest of it, there's not really any guy that's sticking out. Kerry Carpenter, actually, I'm pretty sure Kerry Carpenter is one of that as well, and he's on the IL. So without those two, they are literally a replacement level offense. That's what WAR says for them, and I don't think it's really that far off. Love it or hate it.
Yeah, I know, Chris. Or Chris, what'd you see at West Michigan? Because I just saw the went final. West Michigan having the same offensive problems the Tigers are.
Yeah, they scored a billion runs on Tuesday. In the last two games I went to, they've done nothing on offense. Today was three hits, all by Jim Jarvis. And they lost a game when they gave up two hits. Jaden Hamm was good as six innings. He actually was kind of uncharacteristically wild early on. But two of the runs came on a double that was a flyout that Patrick Lee just misjudged. I think it's his first time playing center field in Lansing and totally took the wrong step and flew over his head. But other than that, you know, Hamm really settled down, looked good. And then Yasber Sanchez came in and looked like a viable big league reliever if he could just throw a couple more strikes. But yeah, absolutely nothing from the offense. Lots of early swings, weak contact. Not encouraging there, no.
Yeah, but Metal Bug, it's been a while. By the way, good to see Metal Bug in our chat. It's been a while since we've seen him in here live. And he mentioned the 1997 Tigers had a better team. He ain't far off from that. I mean, I know, like, for some of you guys, or especially Mike, I don't know about you, Clay, but some of those early night, like, those 90 teams could not pitch to save them lives at all. But it's saying something if we're going back to 1997 for that. But even it's funny, the biggest rush about calling Justin Herman Molloy, and now he's struggling a little bit. And now fans are just like, I don't.
I mean, we've seen this at every level, right? Where everybody just always wants to call up whoever's performing well in the minors and call them up to a next level, call them up to the big leagues. And they get to the big leagues where it's very, very hard to play baseball and they don't do well, you know, and then they want to send them away as soon as possible. And it's just, I don't know. I understand, like, there's a lack of patience in that regard. I understand that people are the patience is wearing thin in general because baseball has been so bad in Detroit for a decade. But, you know, it's the young guys aren't going to save you, really, at least not this year.
My question is, like, all right, if Molloy's not in the lineup, like, who's replacing him that's suddenly making a big difference on the outcome of the game? You know, I would rather personally just see Molloy and see him or learn if he can adjust, see the differences he makes over time than seeing somebody else who, you know, may not have as much of a potential impact in the future. To me, it's Molloy showed enough in back-to-back years in AAA that he's earned this shot. And like I said, there's no one that he's like blocking that's drastically going to change the outcome of the game. So let him get his run. Let him learn from his mistakes and then see how it looks, you know, as it continues on. We saw struggles across the board. It's not just the fringe prospects. I mean, Pete Crow Armstrong for the Cubs is a top 10, 15 prospect in all of baseball who has struggled out of the gate as well. It's not so uncommon that fans should just say, all these prospects are bad, or the development's awful, the hitting coaches are awful, whatever it may be that we see on that great app. To me, it's, you know, let's see these guys settle in. There's nothing to lose.
So we're going to shift gears when we're going to end the podcast, but I'm going to ask you guys all a question. I'm going to ask you guys. So Chris, I'll ask you first. How many times in the last Tigers versus the Angels, because they're out and they're away right now. They're on the road. against the Angels. And so I want to ask you, how many times do you think in the last, or they have a good round number, you think the Tigers in the last 10 years have had over, like, done 500 or better, or not have done over 500 against the Angels this season? How many times do you think?
Oh, have in a season, how many times have they had a better than 500?
Yeah, I don't know. I was trying to struggle with saying it correctly, and I couldn't.
So maybe twice in less. Maybe twice. And I want to say that maybe once. I remember, I thought one year they did it was the year when they lost 110 games or whatever. Their worst year, they happened to actually beat the Angels.
Okay, so you're saying, okay, you're saying in the last 10 years, okay.
So going back to 2014, you say?
2014, yeah.
Yeah, maybe twice that they've had a winning record against the Angels. If this is just in California or overall?
Overall. Okay, you know what? Yeah, let's do a way, actually. So how many times in California or Los Angeles, technically? Or is it
I'll say two.
You'll say two? Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Mike, how many times you
say one
in the last 10 years?
They're just criminally terrible on the West Coast, unless you're Javi Baez in Arizona, apparently.
Okay, Bob Barkered me.
I'll go zero then.
Okay, there it is.
All right, so how many times have okay, so this is where the okay, it is. Can't count twice.
Ding, ding, ding.
Ding, ding, ding. So
exactly right.
So the Tigers were 3-0 against the Angels last year on the road. They swept the Angels. Yeah, last year.
Oh, geez.
And then they were 2-1 against the Angels on the road in 2019. Overall, on the overall side of things, they've been 3-3 against in the last two seasons. But how many times the Tigers have done over 500 overall in the last 10 years?
I would again. I'm gonna let the other guys go.
I think twice is still the right answer, probably.
I'll go three.
You go three.
I'll go Chris? Three. I'll claim it.
Yeah, I mean, I can't. If I can't pick twice, then I can't go four, and I can't go one. So I'll just go with two again.
Wrong! All right. So it is none. And the answer is none. So
overall. Wow.
Overall. Yeah. So since the year 2000, let's just go back to the year 2000, the Tigers have had a winning record over 500 against the Angels. It was 2009. They finished 5-4. In 2010, 6-4. Prior to 2009, the last time the Tigers had a winning record against the Angels over 500 was 6-5 in 1997.
Huge bummer. You know, I was just watching Carlos Guillen's bat flip against Jared Weaver. I loved when they played the Angels when Jared Weaver was on the Angels, man. I loved those games.
Yeah.
I can't remember hating an athlete as much as I hated Jared Weaver. Like 2011, 2012, that era. Oh man, that's some fun stuff. And I don't really hate really any. There's no rivalries like that I can think of right now anymore.
So prior,
like Reese Hoskins.
Yeah, I was gonna say there's not that much of that high tensionness to it, is there?
Yeah, the Angels. Back then, as a whole, it reminded me of like the Pistons Pacers. You know, they weren't in the same division, so it wasn't quite that heated. But there was definitely, you know, the Angels were always really good, and Weaver was always kind of vying with Verlander for like top pitcher in the American League. And then that one particular game when it all came to a head was spectacular.
Yeah, there was the home series too was interesting too. The Angels were always played the Tigers really good. At home or on the road, the Angels played the Tigers really well on the road. But outside of last year in 2019, the Tigers last had a winning season prior to 2019. The last time the Tigers had a winning record on the road in Anaheim prior to 2019 was 1993.
So, yeah, again, that's baseball's dumb. 2019, they won what 47 games. What was it?
Third.
49 games. Yeah.
Yeah. So, by the way, we did get a scouting report on Cole Turney. So, there's a couple of scouting reports coming out of the Tiger Mind report. So, there's that. What else we got? Oh, I'm finishing up the Andrew Navigato should be called up. So, if you're a Patreon member or if you want to join our Patreon, it's right behind our paywall for that. And they'll be up on, or also if you're a YouTube super subscriber member. So, I think old BK might be, I think. And there's some people in the chat this evening. On here or on a minor league report, you can go ahead and check that out. There'll be a Roberto Campos one too coming up, but not because of him coming up to the Tigers. Goodness no, if he deserves a call to Double A soon. So, got that. Clay, thanks so much for joining us. What do you have? What do you want to pimp out? What's going on over at Just Baseball?
Man, they're doing draft coverage, and I'm writing about all kinds of stuff. I just wrote about the Orioles, and I'll have some Tiger stuff coming as well, and Reds and A's and anything else that they can convince me to do. So I appreciate you all having me on. It's always a fun time.
Yeah, I saw you. We have a trip to Mexico down. We were supposed to hang out last time, and then just stuff happened. And then, Mike, I was going to ask you, how was Electric Forest, by the way?
I mean, it was great, but we rained out a day and a half of music. So, you know, hasn't happened since 2017.
I was going to say, it seemed like there's a lot of storms out that way, man.
Yep. They close it down early, man.
Was it just danger to the listeners, the fans there? Because they don't, I assume that there are stages, right?
Yeah, but it's like all outside and lightning outside with venues.
Everybody just wear their rubber suits. You'll be fine.
Yeah.
nice and cool.
Well, I appreciate everybody coming on and hanging out with us for a little bit during the Tigers game. Right now, the Tigers are in the bottom of the third. Angels up 1-0 as Miguel Sano hit a home run. And I totally and utterly forgot that Miguel Sano was the thing.
Well, he wasn't until he came back with the Angels this year. He trimmed up and yeah.
Yeah. He spent the whole minor league last year in the minor leagues, didn't he? Or was he not play at all last year?
I don't remember if he was injured or in the minors or a little bit of both. Or
yeah, then he missed a decent chunk of this year with an injury as well. But he's kind of like, I mean, he's not back, but he's on his road back. I like it. You know, why not?
Yeah, I mean, OPS of 726. Oh.
I mean, heck, that'd put him, what, third place on the Tigers, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's only 31.
Yeah. I mean, I'd rather do that than what they have currently right now. I mean, no offense to Gio Urshela, but yep. It is what it is. But thanks so much for tuning in. We appreciate it. And like I said, there's a bunch of extra bonus content coming out. And go to Just Baseball. Check out their great content, justbaseball.com. Great Twitter account too as well. They do some fantastic work, and I'm not just saying because Clay and I are friends, but honestly, that's just a great site, and they do a better job than some, again, fan-sided sites. I'm just gonna rip on fan-sided for the rest of my days now. I mean, I'm still working there technically, but I'm over it. I'm just sick and tired of you want good quality content. It's not gonna be clickbait. You want some good quality content that's gonna provide some value. Go to justbaseball.com. There you go. They do their homework and they do the research and they do it what I think is good writing and what
yeah. We appreciate that.
Yeah. Hey, there's a guy on your staff that has a Baseball Writers Association pass. We should use that. Nah. We'll talk about that offline. Until then, have a good night, everybody.